I'm still with Ger Thorpe. The first time I saw Ger talk was at Thinking Digital, and once again my mind is all a clutter with a mass of data and art, and the connections made between data and culture and human history. Thank you very much for another inspiring talk.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure.
What have you been working on since the Thinking Digital talk, and what brings you here to Culture Code?
Well, you know, a lot of the projects that I talked about at Thinking Digital have gained legs and have kind of kept on going and going and going and going. So we're continuing a lot of that work, but we started some new initiatives at the Times Research Group, and then I'm starting some other projects of my own, and conveniently, a lot of them are exploring one of the things that I thought was really important to come and talk about at this event, which is a sort of way that data binds with culture, and the way that we can examine data in a really human way, and the way that some of the more artistic ways of framing information can help us understand data and our existence in this crazy data-rich world.
Now, not as easy to get across in audio only, because some of the visualizations you've shown were particularly breathtaking, for want of a better description.
I can make sound effects.
You could make some sound effects. That'd be fantastic. Your job title and what you do to the uninitiated.
I'm the data artist in residence at the New York Times. That's a title I made up, so we can't put too much weight in it. But you know, I'm a software artist, but for the last few years I've been really steeped in data. So I do a lot of data visualization. Sometimes that's really straight up data visualization, analytical, sort of more scientific, but most often it's experimental. You know, I always think about what we do in the R&D group is like, we're those guys that build cars made out of banana skins in the BMW labs. You know, we're doing the really crazy stuff that may not work all the time, but by doing these really, I think, experimental things, we're hoping to push through and come up with new ways of solving problems that we just don't really know how to solve right now.
In some ways, you're the embodiment, I think, of what Culture Code is trying to do, this marriage between tech and art, this building of bridges, I've said it a few times, and this creating spaces where these guys get to hang out and some of this stuff gets to stick together. How can they do that and create long-term relationships between normally two different mindsets?
Well, you know, I think, and I said this in my talk, is that the shift that has to happen is we have to understand the arts is valuable. We have to understand the fact that artists can inform, they can inspire work that later becomes financially productive. And this has happened over and over and over and over and over again in history. I think we get too stuck thinking about getting an arts institution to partner with a tech company, and they can do an exhibition in the lobby. You know, that's the type of partnership we have. But instead, I want to understand how this incredible research output that artists are doing can really be used by these companies, and hopefully later, you know, I'm this crazy digital utopian, we'll make the world better.
You showed a really, really interesting example of a predecessor of Google Maps and the three-dimensional street view that we have. Can you explain a little bit about what you showed?
Yeah, so this is a project by Michael Aiken, and it was out of MIT in the 1970s. So he was really interested in this idea of reproducing the experience of space. And in the 70s, artists were working with video a lot, so he thought they could reproduce this experience of space using video. And so he built this really amazing project. It was done in Aspen, where he literally strapped a car to the top of his station wagon, drove around Aspen, took all this panoramic video, and then he has this touchscreen interface, 1978, where you can go through Aspen street by street and, you know, turn right and look left. And it's street view, but it's, you know, 30 years before street view. And that's not an exception. Like, almost anything that we think of as revolutionary, we can trace back to artists in the beginning of... Remember that artists started using computers the minute after computers were invented, more or less. And so, you know, they were in the ground level with a lot of this early experimentation with technology. And before this has become such a financial monster, and people could just pursue ideas, and that's, you know, that's the, still the value of the artist, I think, is the artist can pursue ideas without necessarily purposely thinking about how to make money from them.
So we're talking now about what needs to be potentially a forced change in business models here to slay this beast, this financial beast.
Well, I'm not trying to slay the financial beast, and I think we have this in a lot of companies, and this thing is just a research group, and a lot of small companies have what they call a research group, but it's not really a research group. They're just doing some different things. But a lot larger companies like Google and Apple and Microsoft, they all have these research groups that are kind of looking into the future. Now, I think it's a natural fit for those research groups to partner with artists, and that's happening now. It'll happen more and more and more, and I think it's tremendously valuable. What you're seeing with artists like myself and like Zach Lieberman, who I talked about, like Aaron Coblin, these people are being hired by these big companies to be involved in their research endeavors because it makes so much sense.
Okay, fantastic. So you can embrace research and experimentation and the passions that are involved with getting artistic with technology. And maybe if you word it correctly, some of the larger organizations out there will see the value and bring you in-house.
Yeah, and I think there's a balance, though. Artists should definitely be brought into these research endeavors, but I think there's also a danger of them being swallowed by them. And it's hard to be a practicing artist. I speak from personal experience when you're working full time for a corporate research group. And so, my feeling is that these things will work best when they're short term, like a residency. People will come in for a short period of time, work with a company, engage with what they're doing, maybe be allowed to make something that is sort of freed from the usual corporate handcuffs and say, hey, why don't you come into our company and make a project? You can kind of do what you want, and we're not gonna ask you to do something, but let's accept that the results of this project are probably going to be valuable for both you and for me.
I really like the idea of an artist in residence at every company, this spare desk that's not idle or empty for long because there's a rotation of artists that are brought in and paid to experiment and play. And if you know, they can just get a slight grasp on some of the things you're doing with data, for example, there's going to be a lot of inspiration flying around.
Yeah, and there's also the value of having somebody from outside who thinks in a different mindset to ask questions. Sometimes I find that you know, the questions that artists ask to people get people to think, we never thought about it that way. And there's a legacy of this, of artists working in residence at research groups, but usually in the scientific community. So at universities, you know, there's a really famous example of it, a partnering between Bell Labs and some really famous artists during the 60s called the Eat Art, Evenings of Art and Technology. But since then, they seem to be restricted mainly to academic scenarios. You do hear a little bit about artist residencies happening in bigger companies, but not very often.
Fantastic. There's some really interesting projects going on in the UK. I think we just need to, you know, pour some water on them and nurture them a little bit more. And these spaces don't necessarily have to be for large groups of artists to move in herds and meet techies. We could be talking on an individual level as well. I think you did a fantastic job tonight for someone who's only had 3 hours sleep. And when are you heading back?
I'll be back in New York on Friday, so it's a quick trip in and out.
Well, thank you very much. Where are you talking next?
Well, I'm talking an event tomorrow here, and then after that, I'm in an event called Resonate in Belgrade in the middle of March.
Wow, fantastic! Well, the bar is open. I won't keep you from another refreshing beer, and I'll see you tomorrow. Cheers.
See ya.